Welcome to Loading the Bar with physical training experts Parker McBride and Matt Wasko. Our Fit Lifestyle podcast covers the science of nutrition and fitness, together with the challenges we all face to be disciplined. We'll guide you through the minefields of fads and gimmicks and all manner of BS that tempt us in today's fitness world. Ready to begin? Then let's start loading the bar.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Loading the Bar podcast. I am your host today, filling in for Parker. I am Brian Keller. And as always, our co-host is Matt Wasko. And we are celebrating episode 60 today.
60. I will say getting to 60 has been a little slower than getting to 50. year's been rather sporadic with my competitions and Parker starting new family, so that's definitely taking up his time. But we're so appreciative of Brian filling in as the co-host, and him having a radio background definitely helps. How you been, man? I hear you kind of raspy this morning.
Yeah, well, and I was going to say, and going from 50 to 60, it's summertime too, right? So everyone's busy in the summertime. And yes, for those viewing, I do have, and especially listening is allergies the last couple of days have hit me really, really hard. And they don't typically, because I normally take a daily allergy pill, and I was feeling so good. I was like, I won't take it. So for two or three weeks, I think I stopped. And then all of a sudden, I heard that ragweed on Thursday was really, really, really high. Maybe I'm allergic to ragweed. I don't know, but it's given me a raspy voice. It's given me a slightly sore throat. It's given me stuffiness. I don't like having allergies.
Yeah, no, I get it. Have you ever been to like Arizona or Las Vegas area where the desert is? Have you ever been there and noticed your allergies just stop?
Well, so you and I talked a little bit briefly before we came on that we were in Oregon. The wife and I, with a couple of good friends of ours, were in Oregon last week. And the funny thing about that, Matt, was the air was dry, just like a Vegas or a desert air.
Right.
We were sitting outside. It had gotten, it was like 70s, 80s, just like it is out here, with no humidity. And then Friday, Saturday of last week, it hit 95. The people were freaking out in Oregon because they're like, man, it doesn't normally get this hot. But I'm like, we're used to it. It's just we're used to it with humidity. And we were sitting out having lunch on a patio up on a rooftop, had an umbrella above us, and we had water and we had a couple of drinks. But the water, if you looked, the water was in a plastic cup, and you saw all the ice and everything. Not one of our glasses was condensing, was sweating. No condensation on the outside of the glass.
Yeah.
And there was still all the ice in there. I'm like, it's 95 and no humidity, and it's not even melting. I was like, oh, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
It was just something to see, because normally around here, all the ice would have been melted. It would have just been sweating everywhere. It was just crazy.
Yeah, no, I get it. And what my wife, we went out to Arizona. It was, let's see, it was 115 during the day.
And but it felt like 90, though, right?
Well, when you were in 115, if you were on the concrete or the blacktop, you felt it.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, you felt it.
Yeah.
But if you walked into the shade, it was like drop, like, I don't know, 20 degrees. It was really bizarre. Yeah,
yeah,
really bizarre there. My wife, you know, and I thought, I mean, this is going to be brutal for my wife, because my wife hates being hot. I mean, she hates it.
Yeah.
And we were out there a couple of days. She's turned to me and she goes, and at night, at like 8 o'clock at night, it's, you know, 105. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's insane. It's completely blackout. It's 105.
Right.
I'm like, what the hell? And so she goes, you know, I could live here. I'm like, what? You could live here? I'm like, what do you mean? She goes, I have no allergies. I'm not sweating. I was like, it's just heat. I was like, what I can't stand is sweating.
And I'm like, it's that humidity.
Yeah, humidity. So she discovered she hates the humidity.
Right.
You know, the heat isn't that big of a deal to her. I mean, it's hot. I mean, like, you go out, like, you're in a restaurant and you walk outside onto, and there's a lot of blacktop there. And there's not much grass.
Yeah.
And you walk out onto that blacktop or that concrete, and the heat you feel isn't from above. It's coming off the concrete.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's just super intense.
Yeah.
Super intense. So outside of that, man, everything, we haven't done a show for a couple weeks, I think.
Oh, several. It's been a month, I'd
been
say.
A month? Okay.
Yeah, about a month.
And so how you been in that month? You know, you've been working on your bench. I know that.
Yeah, I've been working pretty hard. Parker still kicks my butt weekly. So he's been writing some good workouts, and I've been working on trying to get this brachioradialis healed up, which is doing a lot better. It's not fully out of the woods, but I've been stretching it more. Still just not doing a whole lot of curls yet, but doing, you know, still working on it a little bit. But
yeah,
I feel great. I'm just getting in and trying to push.
Yeah. Well, I know it's been bothering you a while.
It has. About 8 months.
No, that's about the how long it takes. Yeah. You know, you're looking at any time you get those injuries, 8 to 10 months. I mean, we had talked earlier before the show how I've injured my shoulder about a month. That would be 5 weeks now, 6 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I knew when I did it, it was going to be at least a 10-month recovery.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Because I've had enough injuries that I know how long they take.
That's bad that you know.
Yeah. But because of all the therapy, I mean, I have been aggressively treating it, you know, with the neurosuit and infrared light.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it is about 65-70% right now. So
that's good.
Yeah, so big shout-out to Brand New Day Clinic for those that's in Lenexa, Kansas. Man, they are really – I went out there on Thursday to get a light treatment on my shoulder, and they were busy. And
that's good.
Yeah, and a lot of their clients are flying in from around the country.
Really?
Yeah, and staying there a week to get like a couple weeks of therapy or a week of therapy.
And this is something that's, I'd say, that's relatively new to where people weren't ever, they didn't know about it. So this light therapy is, I think a lot more people are finding out about it. That's probably why people are flying in, because they know they may not necessarily have it in their city or Midwest, as always, seems to be a much closer place to fly into, depending on where you're at in the coast and depending on where those other locations are and who has them. But
right.
That's good. That good for your good for the people that you know at the day clinic.
Is that's Brand New Day Clinic.
Brand New Day Clinic.
And they have a division there called Pain Lab.
Okay.
And so a lot of people come there because they're in pain.
Sure.
And I had a member here at the gym. It's like first time I met him, this was probably a year ago, and he's like, even then he was telling me, I go, how are things going? He goes, man, I'm in pain all the time.
Yeah, it's not fun.
You know, all the time.
Yeah.
And I knew I hadn't experienced the infrared light therapy at that point. And after I did it, I'm like, I mean, even Thursday, I walked in there, my shoulder was just killing me. And I walked out after just doing 25 minutes of light therapy in my shoulder. I felt brand new. Okay.
Wow.
And now that's about a 4-hour period, right? It's going to come back. But I walked out there, I was like, oh, my shoulder feels so good.
Nothing like having no pain.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I'm just sitting there moving around, enjoying it. And I'm like, oh, this feels fantastic. You know, and then sure enough, you know, after about 3 to 4 hours, it starts to come back a little bit, but it's mitigated.
Yeah.
And I know it's getting better because each time that I have benched, I'm getting a little bit heavier.
Mm-hmm.
One of the first days when I was trying to come back from this injury, I put, 45 pounds on the bar. I just did the bar, right?
Right.
Not 45 pounds on the bar. I did the bar.
Right.
Hurt.
Yeah.
That's not a good sign.
You've messed it up pretty good when just doing the bar hurts.
Yeah, and it hurt.
Yeah.
And then I worked it up to 135. I worked it up to 185, and that was about where I could do it, and that was over 3 weeks. The last 2 weeks, I did 205 for sets of five, and then I did 225 for four sets of five. And that's about what the shoulder, I mean, I could tell anything heavier, shoulder is going to not like that.
You know, I would like to maybe give out a shameless plug to Mark Bell, who has the slingshot.
Yes.
You should maybe get you a slingshot. I have it, and it's supposed to, well, it does. It makes your form the correct form and takes everything off the shoulder and puts it just on the chest.
Oh, I've used them, I believe.
Right, but yeah. I was going to say you should have one, and you should try your training as you're recovering from your shoulder to see how much that helps.
Yeah, my coach has one, and he brings it in. He brought it in during our training.
Okay.
And, but I haven't. He has not brought it in since. And I have looked at it. I should probably go ahead and get me one of those. I had one actually in the a shopping cart basket, and then for whatever reason, I didn't pull the trigger. I don't remember why.
You should get it.
Yeah, 100%.
I love mine.
And especially during this period where my shoulder mm-hmm. is in the position it
That's
is.
What I'm saying, because it'll help strengthen your chest and take the the stress load off your shoulder, and load off 100%,
your shoulder, 100%, 100%,
and continue to let it heal.
Yeah, 100%. So it's a good idea, co-host.
So today we have an interesting show. You have several different topics that you've been doing a little research on that you'd like to cover. Do you want to just kind of hit a little bit on all three, or do you just want to dive?
Well, the first thing we're going to do is there's a bar, now.
This is not a drinking bar. We're talking about a protein bar.
Right.
Matt doesn't want to go, suggest that we are promoting any establishments here.
No, 100%, 100%. No, I'm not a big – I just want to caveat this. I am not a big fan of getting your protein through power bars or through any type of protein bar, mostly because of all the crap that's in them. Right.
Yeah. Now you can find some good ones, but yes, most of them that you go out and look, they have so many additives that they don't even need to be in there, really.
Right. You know, and if it's not, sugar, then it's sucralose or some type of other artificial sweetener. Mm-hmm. They have seed oils in them. Mm-hmm. And and I always tell my clients, I've done hundreds of meal plans, and I tell them that, if you're in a pinch, that's the only time I want you to do a protein bar,
Well, but make it a clean one, though.
Yeah.
If you can. I mean, there's so many out there. Just find one that's clean.
Right. And I mean, I have to be mindful that I don't put those protein bars on their meal plans because technically I don't want them to do them. Some of them had come to me where the protein bar is part of their everyday protein hit. And so I had to say, listen, if this is going to be a transition, moving away from protein bars to hit your protein goals and trying to get it with good food, right? Mm-hmm. And I just say, listen, if you're in a pinch one time, that's fine, right? But do not rely on protein bars, right? And if they can get a clean one, even better, right? But this is a protein bar that we're going to talk about today. It's made by Prima. And I saw it advertised online, and a lot of the there's a protein bar you like. I can't remember what it's called. It's
Atlas.
No, not the Atlas. It's one you can get at QT, and it's like really clean. And you brought it for the show.
Yeah, and since I've been having the Atlas ones, I can't think of besides that and the coffee one, the coffee snacks, the one those.
It's
are the
like
two
a it's like simple ingredients. They're all listed on the front package.
Oh, you're talking about the RX bar.
RX bar, yeah.
No, I haven't eaten those since I've been eating the Atlas and the coffee bars. No, the RX bars aren't bad either though.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, I think
they have natural flavors in them. That's you can
they do have natural flavors.
Hardly
in them.
Ever get away from that, and that's why I've kind of stopped because it's natural flavors, and that gives them license to put anything in it.
Well, they tasted so gross to me, I didn't like them.
Yeah, right. They're chewy. They're very chewy.
Yeah.
That's
kind of the thing with I think you did bring in the Atlas bar. Did you bring in the Atlas bar? Okay. Mm-hmm. So I think I did like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have a chocolate, really double chocolate and a, they don't call it double chocolate, I don't think, but it's chocolate with chocolate chips. And then they have a peanut butter one that's really good too.
Yeah. So the challenge of power bar, or I should keep saying power bars, the challenge of protein bars is the preservative part of it.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah, the clean ingredients, lack thereof, and then the
right
the,
and putting it in a package that can maintain its look, right?
Yeah,
and it's not going to get because if you think about it, a lot of your ingredients that you make, and if you were not to put any type of preservatives in them at all, and you just put them in a package, they ain't gonna last long in that package,
right?
Okay. So that's always the kind of the challenge. So I am in, I bought these bars and I want to read the ingredients on them, because the last I looked at them, I thought, well, the ingredients on these are, seem pretty clean.
It looked clean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let me grab these real quick. They're down here on the floor.
I almost feel like we're part of a little cooking show here.
I know. I know. Awesome. I know. This is cool.
This is
all
good.
All right. So.
He's got his nice little knife and
I'll let
his
you
fork.
Look at the mocha.
Okay.
I'll so, look at this salted caramel.
This is Prima right here. This is the mocha. So there are, let's take a look here.
And why don't you read off the ingredients in that one?
All right. Prima, oh, of course, they're touting their own protein blend. It's the Prima protein blend, which is grass-fed bovine collagen peptides, grass-fed whey protein concentrate, organic raw honey, grass-fed beef tallow, organic cacao nibs, organic agave inulin, which is a prebiotic fiber. Then there's organic coffee extract, which is filtered water and organic coffee, organic coconut, organic vanilla extract, and sea salt. So, I mean, several ingredients, but they all look pretty healthy. And the one that really caught my eye is there's actually beef tallow in this.
Yeah.
So that, okay.
Now it makes me think, if there's beef tallow in this, it could be kind of
greasy. Oily or greasy?
Greasy,
well,
yeah.
We'll see.
All right, so this one just had a little bit different. Obviously, the Prima protein blend. It's got the grass-fed beef tallow. Interesting. Organic coconut nectar. Organic raw honey. Organic agave inulin. Organic cocoa nibs, organic coconut, organic vanilla extract, and sea salt, and it contains milk and coconut.
The one thing that, this one said contains milk and coconut. So the one that gets me on the on this one here, you said it has what is coconut nectar?
That's a good question.
I mean, it makes it sound like it's really good. It makes it sound like it's very healthy for you.
Okay, so coconut nectar is a sweet syrup-like liquid made from sap of coconut palm tree flowers. It's natural sweetener that looks and feels like honey or maple syrup.
Okay.
With caramel-like flavor. Farmers collect the sap from cutting the flower buds and then gently heat it to thicken it without adding chemicals or preservatives. It's often used instead of sugar, honey, or agave in things like smoothies, pancakes, or baking because of its vegan, gluten-free, and has low glycemic index.
Okay.
Meaning it doesn't spike the blood sugar as much as regular sugar. It contains small amounts of nutrients like potassium, magnesium, zinc, iron, and vitamin B and C.
Okay. There
you
go.
So they're definitely...
it's good.
I mean, this is one of the cleanest bars I can think of.
I agree. What's the chocolate?
Let's see. Let's see if there's anything different in here. Let's see. Organic raw honey, the tallow, cocoa nibs, organic cocoa nibs. I'm not exactly sure what that means, but organic cocoa powder, organic coconut... organic vanilla extract, and sea salt.
Oh, that's even more limited, it seems like.
Yeah.
Nice.
So,
which one would you want to try first?
We're gonna try all three.
Right.
Okay. Well, let's try the mocha first.
All right.
So,
are you ready for a little coffee kick?
Yeah, really. Okay, I've never tried this.
We're opening it up.
So,
yeah, it's got a little bit of a greasiness.
Yeah,
I mean, you can see the sheen on it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Look at that.
A little bit. But you know what? So do the Atlas bars. But they don't even have beef tallow in them either. But they have a little bit of a greasiness to them. It looks dense, by the way. It's going to be chewy. I can see by you're cutting it. Yeah.
All right. So what was the nutritional facts on this? Protein is 16 grams. So...
16 grams. And what's the overall sugar? Does it say on those what the sugar is?
Let's take a
look at it. So you can kind of see what the calories are. 240 in this one. Are they 240 in that one?
16 grams on this one. Okay. Carbs.
Yeah, and this is total of 16. Around 240 calories with 16 grams of protein. Okay. Oh, that's dense. Ooh, smells good, though.
And here's a...
All right, you want me to jump in?
Yeah, go ahead. Tell me what you're thinking. I haven't tried it yet. I'm trying to cut it here.
Ooh, very chewy.
Mm.
Definitely.
Oh,
you can
my
taste,
gosh.
You can taste the coffee.
Yeah.
You taste that?
Yeah.
You know what? I bet you almost burned 240 calories eating the whole thing because your your jaws are... You're probably going to net zero calories out of this thing.
Oh, wow. My God.
Mm. It's good.
No, I mean, good.
It's not...
I mean, it's not like...
It's not overbearing with the coffee.
Right.
I mean, it's supposed to be mocha. Mm-hmm. It has just a hint of a coffee flavor. And it's not overpowering, but I will tell you, if you're listening at home or watching, if you don't like chewy bars, you're not going to like these because these are very, very, very chewy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's good.
You almost have, I mean, that's the kind of thing. I think you almost have to blend it up like that for them to preserve them, to have that natural preservative.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
You can see the sheen on it from them. Maybe it's the beef tallow, but it's just one of the ingredients. I mean, it's something. Yeah, you can see it. It gets on your fingers.
Salted caramel?
Sure. Yeah, all save right. The chocolate for last. Mm. All right, let me clean my palate. Parker's missing out on a fun one this
man,
morning.
Oh, man, this is a good one. All right. Wow, that's really oily.
Oh, yeah. And it's a lot flatter than the other. Ooh, that one is.
Wow. Here, I won't give you such a big piece.
Okay, thank you. Hey, well, bro. I'm gonna finish this. I'm not throwing it away, that's for sure. It's okay. You can handle my bar. I don't care.
There you go.
All right, so this one's...
This is the salted caramel.
Definitely, it smells like a piece of caramel candy.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, it does.
Okay. Not quite as dense to chew,
mm-mm.
But still dense. I mean, still chewy, but not nearly. And the bar, I don't know if it's just because you put it somewhere and it smushed it.
I don't think so.
But it's not as...
it's not as dense.
Tall. See, it's not as dense or as tall as the other one,
mm-hmm.
But... You can taste the caramel.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh,
I would like
good.
I like the it's good, but I like the other one better. What are your thoughts?
I'm gonna have to go back and try that one again. I do like the salted caramel.
Caramel. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. But I like all these three flavors that you brought today. I'm sorry, I hate talking with my mouth full, but
it's hard to get it out of your mouth.
Mm-hmm. They all are great flavors. So unless the chocolate just falls on its face, that's probably going to be my favorite. But that salted caramel was good. Now, if they had a chocolate peanut butter caramel, I'd be in heaven.
Mm.
Or something with a little bit of cinnamon in it.
Okay, everything is consistent. An oily texture.
Okay. That one's not as bad, though.
Mm-hmm.
That one almost looks like a brownie. Look on the outside edge of it. It almost looks like a brownie.
You can see they got. You can see the ingredients mixed in there.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I was wondering what these on the coffee on the mocha one, if those are crushed coffee beans or what those were. That one looks dense.
Yeah.
All right, here we go.
Got to clear my palate.
Now, that one reminds me a lot of the one of the Atlas bar I eat.
Really?
Good. Mm-hmm. But I think this is even in the Atlas bar.
Crunchy. It's got crunchy stuff in it.
Good. I like it. Very chocolatey without being too overbearingly chocolatey. I mean, having too much chocolate.
None of them are overbearing.
Mm. No, that's good. Ooh, that's very good.
Well, you heard so. Compared to your Atlas bars, where do you think it ranks?
Honestly, I'm going to go home and look at the ingredients of the Atlas bar again, and pull that up. And when I run out, I'm probably going to get those. How much are those a bar?
I think if you get them online, you get them for a little under $3 a piece. I paid $3.50 a piece for these at Sprouts.
So, for a case of 12, was that what they would come in, a box of 12 probably?
Probably.
Okay, so roughly $30-$36. That's I think that's similar to the Atlas bars.
Mm-hmm.
Atlas are between 2 and 3, I think. So, very similar. I would just need to look and see. I think, okay, so does the chocolate one also have 240 calories? I think they all had 240 calories. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
But 240, I think the Atlas bars that I have are roughly 210. So, I think.
240.
Yeah. So, extra 30 calories a day, you can burn that off easy enough, right? So,
you can't read that, but that says 18 grams of now, these are oily, guys. They're oily. I'm going to guess it's the beef tallow.
16 grams of carbs.
Okay.
So, they're all very similar in content, and the protein on this one.
Definitely have a napkin when you're eating these.
Yeah, absolutely. Note, and the great thing is there's no trans fats, so that's a good thing. Where's the protein at? Where am I missing? Oh, 16 grams of protein.
Yeah.
And 16 grams of carbs. 13 grams of fat. Saturated fat, 7 grams. But they're good. I think if you're looking for a clean bar, as long as you don't mind chewing a little bit, they're very chewy. They're good.
Yeah. Thumbs up.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah.
Thanks, Matt. I appreciate that. That's going to give me a new alternative to go up against the bars
Atlas.
That I have, the Atlas.
Yeah.
Sure.
Mm. Now, do you eat your Atlas bars every day?
Yes. Either well. If I don't have an Atlas bar, I'll have my coffee snacks bar.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that has roughly 250 calories, so 10 more than that. But if I'm feeling a little low on my energy side after lunch or around lunchtime and I need to eat, I'll have a coffee bar. But mostly, yes, it's either a coffee bar or an Atlas bar, and I have those every day.
Well, We have to finish them, so.
Okay. While we're talking, we're just talk and chew.
All right, well.
So what's the next
Our
next topic.
All right, so.
We give these four dumbbells out of four dumbbells?
100%.
Okay, all right.
100%.
I was just trying to throw some measurement in there for how we're, you know, instead of four stars, because this is
the question will be, what would Parker think of them?
Mm. Do you have more at home to bring back and let him try?
No,
Parker, you're on your own. You've got to go to Sprouts and get you some Prima bar.
He won't be motivated to do that.
No.
He gets all his protein because the guy can put down 2 pounds of meat in a sitting, unlike me.
Yeah.
So,
me too.
All right. So, we'll put that. We'll snack on that as we go forward.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
Very good. Very good.
Thank you, Matt.
All right. So,
where are we going next?
We are going to go to a study.
Is this the alcohol study?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, so the study, let me clear my mouth out on this.
Hold on.
This is chewy stuff, guys.
Let me see, smile. Let's see if you got any in your teeth. No, you're good. Okay.
I can always cut some audio out as we're trying to get our wits about us.
It's all good.
Oh. All right.
Mm, okay.
All right. So, the study we're talking about, let me back up here and find the name of it here. Do you remember the name of the study?
Associations between alcohol consumption and gray and white matter volumes in the UK Biobank.
Okay. Yeah, there we go. So, the study looked at how alcohol hurts the brain. It did this by studying 36,000 grown-up in with machines, asking them how much they drank, then using math to spot patterns. They found that most of them had 1 to 2 drinks a day, or they found that having 1 to 2 drinks a day shrinks the brain. So,
wow.
Yeah. So, so more booze worsens damage. So your smaller gray areas of your brain where you do a lot of thinking, there's no safe amount. Even light drinking shows harm.
Wow.
Not helpful, like with some thought. Brains hit hardest are in the front parts of the brain where your decision making is. And then the sides for your feelings. So the front of your brain is for decision making. The sides of your brain are for feelings. And deep spots like the hippocampus part of the brain is for memory. And they can't prove alcohol causes it directly. Self-reports like, you know, people that self-report might not be accurate, right?
Right.
And, but 36,000 would give you some connection.
Oh, I would think so.
And mostly older, these were British people. Okay.
And when you say mostly older, was there an age range?
See, that I might have to dig through the study to find that. Let's see here. I'm not seeing that. I mean, that's something I could probably find.
And this was published back on March 4th of 2022. So it's about 3 years old.
Yeah. And the study conducted in UK, they used scans from MRI machines.
Okay.
And which showed gray and white matter combined this with people's self-reported drinking habits, which we talked about a minute ago, accounted for factors like age, sex, smoking, and income to keep results fair. Regarding the key results of brain size, the study found that even just 1 to 2, which we mentioned again, of single units of beer daily, mm-hmm. Is linked to smaller gray and white brain matter and affects worsening as drinking increases, equivalent to aging the brain by 2 years, 2 to 3 years.
Cool.
Okay. Now, when it comes to specific brain changes, alcohol impacts many areas, which the frontal, the partial regions used for thinking and feeling. So the frontal cortex.
And this was, by the way, Matt, sorry, this was for middle-aged and older adults, is
okay,
what I said.
Okay, good. Thanks for finding that.
Yeah.
These studies are long, so pulling information out of them is not easy because they're a long read.
Well, they're also saying generally healthy, middle-aged
yeah,
and older.
Yeah, generally
adults,
healthy.
Generally healthy.
And those are all things that, like, you would have to, like, probably consult even deeper to find out what they consider generally healthy, right?
Right.
You know, because what I might consider generally healthy might not be what they consider generally
well,
healthy.
Well, and you know what's always, to me, somewhat interesting as well as difficult to do all these studies with is you have to take so many different factors into consideration when doing these. You know, you're trying to find a correlation between drinking and how it affects the brain, but do you take into consideration someone's genetics,
mm-hmm.
the family history? I mean, should you take those things and add them in? It's just always, to me, it's just interesting when you start coming up with studies, where do you draw the line as to what factors do you include and which ones don't you include?
And the other thing that's interesting is there is a whole slew of things that are affecting us.
Right. Outside influences.
Oh,
are
my
everywhere.
Gosh. I mean,
everywhere.
The things we eat from.
Yes.
You know, the detergents that we use, the makeup products we use. I mean,
The candles we burn.
I mean, so, you know, we have to, those definitely have to be considered when we're talking about these things. Mm-hmm. But 36,000 is a pretty big sample size.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It goes on to say, you know, the surprising finding, that which is kind of the gist of all this, and that for the longest time, light drinking seemed not
okay.
a big deal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Their conclusion is light to moderate drinking isn't safe as believed, with no safe level of alcohol consumption identified, challenging the idea of the universe, the inverse U-shaped curve where a little alcohol might benefit the brain. Okay, so this is flying in the face of what we've always, you know, considered to be safe. Comparing to heavy drinking, the study shows that the brain changes in regular people without alcohol use disorder are similar to those seen in heavy drinkers with AUD, and I'm not sure what that means, but occur even with moderate alcohol, intake.
Alcohol use disorder.
Okay.
AUD.
AUD. So, on limitations and cautions, the study can't prove alcohol directly causes brain changes since it's not a long-term study and relies potentially on inaccurate self-reporting. Only included middle-aged United Kingdom adults or European descent, so results may differ from others. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's good that they give that stipulation, but 36,000 is still quite a bit.
Right.
For real-world implication, this suggests even moderate drinking might harm the brain health benefits, raising questions about global health risks from alcohol, whether drinking guidelines need to change. Now, this is what the study... let's talk about that for a second.
Okay.
In light of this study, two questions. One... do you think something about alcohol should change? And two, would it?
What do you mean that alcohol should change? That they
the guidelines. Should there be some type of precaution or safety concerns or regulation of some sort? Because as we know, a lot of our youth get hammered.
Well,
a lot of clients get hammered.
Right. So that's a good question because... now that we've discussed this many times, and I know you have and Parker have discussed it when I haven't been on the show, just our the world that we're waking up to today, where we as a general society are uncovering a lot of things that we were lied to about.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if the current guidelines are accurate for alcohol or not. I know that alcohol affects obviously people differently, and being over in the UK, there's they have stronger beer over there in general. They drink at more room temperature rather than not necessarily room temperature, but a little warmer than we do here. I think we like it a little colder. We drink a lot more light beers, and I thought that beer in its natural state, so to speak, rather than, because, you know, when you get those ultra lights, like the ones that take out everything, like the Michelob Ultras and all that, to me, they tout it as less calories and supposed to be better for you, so you can drink more, but you're taking out all the beneficial stuff of the beer by pulling all that out and leaving it.
Right.
So I would think that the beer that they have over there, it would be actually a little bit, give you some benefit. I mean, beer is not going to, don't get me wrong, beer is not going to, it should not be of much benefit, neither should alcohol. But
right.
So with that being said, with how we've been lied to, I don't know if those are good guidelines that we have or if they should impose stricter guidelines. But, you know, did you look to see if the study was independent or if it was paid for by anybody to see who might be pushing that study?
Let's see. I mean, if I pull
because
that up,
me,
if I pull that up real quick, and I have it handy here. Here, let's see. Association between alcohol consumption.
I don't know that there needs to be any stronger guidelines. People are going to drink whether they want to drink or not.
Right. It kind of comes down to, you know, we should be allowed. There should be a certain. It's kind of okay. This is where it gets kind of. One, well, let's answer the second question. Nothing's going to change.
Okay.
That's the second question. But the first question is accountability. And I think abuse of anything, if it's going to affect your ability to function in life where you have the possibility of harming others, is where something needs to be regulated. Like cocaine is regulated, right? Fentanyl is regulated. And then you could make the argument that alcohol is unsafe to drink because of all the accidents that happen with it. And all the destruction. I mean, alcohol can destroy your life, right?
It
can.
But there are so many people out there, Matt, that are functioning alcoholics. Yes. And they function like the only way that you would know is that you might catch a whiff of it on them. And even then, you would have been like, did I just smell that?
Yeah.
But they hide it so well, and they can function like they're, you know, they have taxed their liver and their kidneys and everything so much. But they still can function like they've you learned, and I, like yeah. you and I are right now, and we yeah. haven't had a drink. It just blows my mind how these people can function like that.
Yeah, it is surprising. And like I said, I have clients that, you know, they'll get hammered the night before, and then they're in here training, which a lot of times I'll just say go home. But and I think you get into a deeper question. It's like, when is abuse of anything that impairs your ability to function need to be regulated?
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, would you include in harming others, harming yourself? You know,
right.
I mean, because you can actually die from alcohol poisoning.
Sure you can.
You know,
sure.
And, you know, so we get into more of it, the ethical side of things that, you know, if you have a neighbor who drinks all the time, he causes disruption to the neighborhood. It's not illegal.
Right. But he's just a pain in the butt.
Yeah. Right?
Right.
But it is, you know, then you kind of get into the question of regulating morality. And I used to be like, well, you can't regulate morality, but I kind of think you can.
How so?
Well, because when you don't regulate morality, the other side's going to, right?
Okay.
And there is no, I mean, like, you know, regulating, you know, certain aspects that protect the, you know, man's decency and his character and keeps functioning. I mean, because the thing is, if you have substance abuse in an area, it could be one person, 20 people, 1,000 people. That you'll know it by looking at that area, right? It's run down. They don't have focus. Their priorities
are completely different.
Yeah, and you know they'll have like a, you know, a $50,000 car outside of a house that's not worth as much or something like that.
And that baffles me. They want to look good riding in the ride, but they don't want to live comfortably.
Yes. I mean the impression is more important than the reality.
That. Yeah, I don't get
that. But, you know, it's like, well, you know, that's choice. But, so, you know, I don't have a big enough, brain to wrap my mind around what we should do in that situation. But, you know, the reason we get in that slippery slope, like alcohol was, prohibited in the 20s and then it was released. And then, you have cigarettes at a certain level. Now marijuana is allowed in certain states. And you know, if you look at one of the things I predicted, being a novice in the area of predicting things, is that when they legalize marijuana in Colorado, I said I guarantee 100% the car accidents will go up. Sure enough, they like doubled. They doubled once marijuana became legal. And they said, well, crime will go down. No, it went up.
It did.
Yeah.
Well, but Colorado, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Colorado is a liberal state, so I can see where that would have taken place.
Yeah. So, I mean, so it's kind of a question of what responsibility do we have to give our societies, our people, a functioning, healthy society, right? And do these things contribute to that? And when you get into the freedom of choice, you know, we do have to implement a sense of, in my opinions, you know, this is a country that was founded on Christian principles, you know, so I do think you have to get into, a sense of, determining what keeps a functioning society. And that's not going to happen anytime soon, but that's just my opinion.
No, but I think with everything that's out there, though, Matt, that would be very difficult to even establish a basis for, I think. I think starting and putting boundaries somewhere for that, I mean, where do you start? It, to me, there's so many different things out there. How would you start that? And then who's to say they don't take it and go a little too far with it?
100%.
So there's, you did say it's a slippery slope for sure.
It is. Well, and here's the other side of it. You know, we don't have a just culture.
Right.
Right. We don't have a just society. So you're going to try to make, regulate morality at that level in a society that's not even just. Right. We don't even have a governing system at the moment. So
let's get there first.
Yeah. Let's
and
get
then,
there first.
And then get 100%. That established and get that kind of something that's it's matter of fact. It's been around long enough, and people take it as okay. Now it's a matter of fact that it's not new anymore. It's been it's been established for a while, and now you can say, oh, we have a just government system, or we are a just society now. Now we can take and maybe look at implementing something like what you're discussing.
I don't want to suggest here that we shouldn't have a use of marijuana or a use of CBD. I'm not suggesting that at all. I'm not suggesting that alcohol should be banned for life. Because I'm not at this point, I feel like we're all infected with, we have bigger issues right now.
We do.
So,
we do. But
it posed an interesting question when it stated that in the study.
All right.
Okay. So the future, they're suggesting we need to study it in younger people, diverse populations, and see the long term effects to see the understanding how quitting drinking or past heavy drinking impacts the brain health over time. That's a pretty relevant statement.
Well, it's pretty vague statement. So, I mean, over time, how much time is it? I mean, I get the longer you drink and the heavier you drink for the longer amount of time that you drink is going to definitely affect you, and it's going to definitely kill brain cells or diminish your brain function. I get that. But did they give a time frame, or they just said over time?
Well, I mean, what they're alluding to is that more studies need to be done over longer periods.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's what
I
they're
agree.
Saying.
Yeah. Well,
and then they're also saying if you were a heavy drinker when you were earlier in your life and you're not now, is there a lasting impact?
Right. Well, I don't know. I don't know that you're going to, first of all, I don't know that you're going to go out and find a heavy drinker that's been doing it a while that's going to be like, they're going to, hey, would you like to participate in a study? Sure. What are you doing? Well, we want you to continue to drink heavy the way you're doing it. But we're thinking that we're going to try to test you for the next 10 to 15 years and see if you get stupid or not. Oh, yeah. Sign me up. I want to do that.
Yeah, yeah,
you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, some of these studies, sometimes you just go, how do you get there?
I don't know.
And how do you get a willing participant that's willing, especially 36,000? I mean, I'm not saying they're all heavy drinkers. The 36,000 is a good place to start. But if you really want to test the validity of the study and see if there's any lasting impacts of heavy drinking and consumption, then I don't know how you're going to get willing participants that are going to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, 100%. And I think, the key takeaway to this is that, if this was like 1,000 or maybe even 5,000, maybe I'd be like, because we've already talked, there's some other world war factors.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
There's also some future studies are going to be, but I do think being a sample size that large.
That's a good sample size.
That is a very good sample size.
That's a good sample
that size. Large, regardless if it's, elders or older people. You said middle age.
Well,
right?
This is people our age, probably a little younger and definitely older. So
right.
Yes, it's all in about.
So
our age.
That being said, that is a somewhat significant correlation that if you're drinking one to two beers a day, that your brain will age.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think let me go back down here. I had a, I did some research and I was like, okay, so is it sane that if you drink like this for 1 to 2 years, how's it going to affect your brains? And he said, if you're going to drink 2 to 3 beers daily, or 1 to 2 beers daily, in a given year, your age, your brain's going to age 2 to 3 years in that year.
Wow.
Yeah.
2 to 3 years.
Yeah. So, something to be mindful of if you're a drinker. I'm not a drinker. I do have my occasional drink. I do like a good, you know, gin and tonic or vodka tonic. I do like that. But I have that like once every 3 to 6 months.
Wow. Yeah. So I am a drinker. I'll have a drink several times a week, and sometimes I'll have two, but it's usually like bourbon and apple cider. Mm-hmm. And I'll have that while I'm working, just to knock the edge off while I'm working.
But here's the question. If your braids does age like that, you probably won't notice ramifications until you're in your 70s and 80s.
Well, I don't know. I've been drinking. Can you tell? I mean, I have a drink or two, you know, yeah, a week. The way I look at it, Matt, I like to, while you're cutting off a piece, would you cut me one too? The way I like to look at that, thank you, is although I'm having a drink and I'm killing my brain cells, I'm counteracting it by doing all the blueprints I'm working on and trying to figure, you know, I've got my brain. Maybe I'm opening it up so I can kill more cells. I don't know, but I'm trying to, I'm really trying to make sure that I'm, mm-hmm. Really working my brains, because I've got to figure blueprints out, and it's constant thought and formulas and different things. So I'm still working it. I know that drinking is not the greatest, and it's not anything that I don't think I indulge in way more than anybody else does. I'm not a heavy drinker. I'm not an alcoholic. But you know, I could probably do better with that, and I try to not have some. Sometimes it's mm-hmm. just it makes it so easy when you're just sitting there working. And you're like, man, I could really I need something. I'm stressed because I'm working, but this helps take the edge off. And well, it just gives me something to sip on while I'm working.
I'll be honest why I don't drink alcohol, because it causes me migraines. Hmm. That's why.
But you know what? That's a built-in deterrent for you.
Yeah.
If I had a built-in deterrent like that, great. But I don't have an addictive personality.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't ever get addicted to anything.
Right, right.
But, I mean, it's nice, you know, can I stop and not want to drink? Sure. It's just so nice sometimes, just having a nice...
I get it.
Having a nice drink.
I get it. Yeah, yeah, but, you know, interesting. I do think it's relevant. I do think there's some truth to this. Mm-hmm. I think more studies probably need to be done.
Yeah.
You know, but again, that's when I saw it was 36,000, I was like, ooh, okay, we definitely need to read this.
Right. So, right. Okay.
All so. Right. So I wanted to go to our next study. And this one, it's not the sample size is not even close to as big.
Okay.
But we're going to use it because I'm biased.
Okay.
So this is a relatively new study. Do you have the year on that study?
The last one was March of 22.
No, this study.
Which study?
This is the ketosis study.
Oh, no, that one, did you...
Yeah, I sent it to you.
Did you? Okay. Oh, yes. Okay, here it is. Let me look here. Ketogenesis mitigates metabolic dysfunction associated steatotic liver disease through mechanisms that extend beyond fat oxidation. Is that the one?
Yeah.
This one was, it's published actually just 3-4 months ago, April 24th, 2025.
Yeah, so this one's new. And I like this one because of, I'm going to have some fun with this one, okay?
Okay.
I like this one because all my fellow health nuts, we have rather... different views. Yeah, let's call it that. Let's call it different views. I don't want to say strong, but different views, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're cutting, I'm a big fan of getting your, I mean, if you go look at all my meal plans that I do, the carbs are between like, some are as low as 30 grams and some are as high as maybe 70, but usually they're between 30 and 70, depending on the size of the person, the aggressiveness of the diet, how much working out they do. So my carbs are always low. Okay. And my fats are always high and my
Your protein's
always high. Right. And it never fails. Once someone learns how to lock in on that, but I'd say, and again, you're always getting self-reporting, right? I mean, I have to trust what people are telling me. Like I have a few people that have done what I've asked them to do and they just seem to struggle, right? Mm-hmm. That's why you only getting 30 to 50 carbs a day and they're saying yes. And I'm like, well, I have to take them at their word. They're not having the same success, right? But I'd say about 70% of the time, when I give these meal plans, the first thing reported back to me, they lost 5 to 10 pounds in the first 2 weeks like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's mostly because of all the water weight.
Well, yeah, yeah. And because they were maybe quite a bit far off from their ideal body weight.
Right. And there's all different types of philosophies out there. But the biggest thing is when you're trying to cut weight, one, you cut those carbs, you're going to feel better, right? Mm-hmm. Carbs taste great. I get it. They're fantastic. They're easy.
But they're loaded with so many unnecessary things.
So, yeah, 100%. They're so bad for you, especially American carbs.
Right.
So they're easy. They're accessible. You can throw them in your bag.
They're everywhere.
They're everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to eat carbs. Proteins, you know, outside of powder, always have to be in refrigerated. So they're not easy, you know, they're not user friendly. It's not like you can throw your yogurt in your bag, right? You have to have it refrigerated.
You have to have a cooler. Or put an ice pack in or something.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, those are the challenges of protein. But fats are pretty easy because let me table that. Fats are not prevalent like carbs are.
Right.
Like fats, you know, most of your fats are in your meats or your dairy.
Or your nuts or your seeds.
Right.
Yeah.
But, when you're trying to, when you eat meat, the body separates the fat and the protein, right? But if you're just eating meat, you don't, if you're cutting your carbs, you don't get enough fat from your dairy or your meat. So you have to supplement with nuts and avocado and cook in tallow or, you know, or olive oil or something like that to supplement those fats. And that's the way a lot of my meal plans are. A lot of my fellow health advocates that, you know, teach, you know, either give health advice or personal training or something to that extent. And those kind of go hand in hand. Personal training and nutrition go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. A lot of people just believe in low fat, high carb and or, you know, where they are pushing a calorie deficit, but it's just you're going to keep retaining. There's two things that happen when you eat carbs. You keep retaining inflammation, and you're getting making those kidneys work overtime to filter out all the crap they put in them.
Yep.
Right.
Well, and even if they're clean carbs, you're still, whether you're in a calorie deficit or not. To me, I just think that your body's gonna store more of those carbs than anything. I
mean, yes.
You know, you're gonna burn some of them, but you're gonna store some of them whether you're at a deficit or not, and then so your body's gonna have to pull from something, which is fine. But I agree. I'm not a big high carb, low fat person. I think a lot of this stems from and you didn't touch on it, but when you're setting up a meal plan for someone to cut weight or to drop pounds and drop fat. I think you also have to be considerate of their body type, because everybody's body type is different, and that gives you the correct ratio that you need versus, you know, protein, fats, and carbs to cut. Like if you remember, I dropped 35 pounds in over a year,
right?
And I just felt it like it was just burning. Everything was just coming off me.
Yeah,
but it is a ratio that you have to play with, and you have to, you know, that fluctuates for different people.
Right.
But high carbs and low fat, I would never be a proponent of that.
So I poke fun at my friends when I read this study. Okay, so a summary of the study. Okay, so imagine your liver. Your liver is kind of like a busy kitchen, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And it stores and uses fat to keep you healthy. Okay, and sometimes you know too much fat builds up in that kitchen, or i.e. the liver, mm-hmm. And it makes you sick.
Right.
So, this is a metabolic dysfunction, and it's associated with liver disease.
Okay.
Okay. One of the liver diseases is called metabolic dysfunction associated
steatotic. Yeah.
Or MALSD, and it can get even worse and go to MASH, which is metabolic.
Dysfunction associated steatohepatitis.
Yeah. Okay, I mean, which hurts the liver even more. So you know, the study, what they wanted to learn is how the body uses fat in the liver, and they found that the process called ketogenesis, which we know about, where the liver turns fat into energy, called ketones, helps protect the liver from getting sicker. And in people, in mice, like ketogenesis doesn't work well. The liver gets more fat and can get hurt. But ketogenesis does more than just burn fat. It helps the liver stay healthy in other ways, like keeping fat from piling up too much. And this study shows that helping the liver make ketones might be a way to keep it healthy.
So did you look again to see if this is a study that was brought on by any organization, or that was backed by any, or commissioned by any sort of company or anything, any group?
So that, let me pull that. I always have to pull that study back up.
We always want to make sure that these are independents before we start, you know, really going into.
Right. So
believe them or not.
A bunch of names are listed on this. Let me go to more info here. Published June 16th, 2025. This work was licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution. So it looks like I would have to dig deeper.
Okay, no worries. That's fine.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead. I didn't mean to throw you off.
No, it's all right.
It's
100% a valid question. And maybe my bias wanted to overlook that because I like what it says.
Right, right. Well, let's continue
on. Let's
get
into it. All right. So some points from this study. As we know, liver disease is a growing problem, okay?
Yes.
And why? Because liver disease, people eat a ton of what? Carbs.
And people drink a lot.
They drink, yes. Sugar drinks, yeah.
Right.
And but carbs.
Well, but alcohol for your liver is also mm-hmm. very hard. It takes a while for it to filter all that out.
I mean, it's even a worldwide problem.
Yes.
So,
yes.
And what they're finding is a lot of people are moving from the MALSD to the MASH, which is even worse for your liver. And I'm not going to pronounce those again.
Right.
But the risk, let's call it MASH,
right,
which is the more concern, increases the risk of scarring, fibrous, and serious liver diseases like cirrhosis of the liver, cancer, are making it a big concern for doctors. So the liver's fat buildup is tied to obesity and insulin resistance as well.
Well, now you can really see why we're having all of those issues, and this is becoming a problem, is because the United States is a very obese country.
Yeah, and, I mean, we've talked about this on the show. I mean, you just look at people from the 20s and 30s and pictures and video, and you look at people today, it's alarming.
Well, and not only is it just there was a different way of life back then, they did a lot more walking in general to and from, back then, but they didn't really start producing all these foods with all these nasty additives in them until, what, 50, 60, 70 years. So then they didn't really have all that stuff that they do now. So it's put it on us in as a society a lot more.
So let me give you the measuring that they used, the score, and then the number of people. Now, again, not a lot of people in this study. Okay. We'll get to that. So the scoring system. To understand how sick the liver is, scientists use something called NAFLD, Activity Score, or NAS, which ranges from 0 to 8. The NAS looks at three things: how much fat is in the liver, how much inflammation is there, and how much damage those liver cells have, like, which is called ballooning, right?
Okay.
The cells are ballooning up. A score of 4 or higher means MASH.
Okay. That's only half.
If someone's NAS score is 4 or higher, they have MASH, which means their liver is more seriously damaged. And the study found that 14 out of 16 people had signs of liver cell damage or inflammation, and 10 had scarring, showing how common these issues are in MAS, I'll call it MASLD. There's only one approved drug for these two conditions, MASLD and MASH, right now. And they don't say what it is, but of course it's a drug. And right now the FDA approved drug is to treat both of those, and the other drugs have failed because they didn't work well, cause a lot of side effects, which all of them cause a lot of side effects.
All of them do. Yeah.
This shows we need a better way to treat the disease, especially people who don't have diabetes or obesity, and the liver uses fat in different ways to stay healthy. So ketogenesis is important to getting rid of all the extra fat. How do you bring on that?
On ketogenesis?
Uh-huh.
The way I understand it is, if you're going to go ahead and put your body in a state of ketosis, it's not good to be doing that for long, long extended periods of time. It's best and most effective by doing it, I don't know what the time frame is, but I've been told, because I've never tried any ketogenesis types of diets or meal plans.
So what's your current carbs at right now?
You know, I haven't been tracking
it. Okay.
I have not been tracking all my stuff, but I will tell you, I eat very little carbs. I don't eat much. I have more. My meal plan is more of a protein and fat. I will have some carbs, like yesterday, I had two pieces of Dave's Power Bread.
Mm-hmm.
One, I put some salted butter on it, and then I put a little bit of peanut butter on the other one. And that's how I had my fats and my carbs for like a little snack just afternoon yesterday or Thursday. So I don't eat much. If I do, Matt, it might be some chips with some of my salsa in the evening, but I really, in the grand scheme of things, I don't have a lot of carbs in my diet, so I haven't tracked them.
That means you probably are having some ketones released, right?
Yeah, probably some. Yeah.
So scientists studied 16 people.
Okay.
So small sample size.
Extremely small.
Yeah.
Same neighborhood, around same block.
And all of them had liver fat buildup. And the researchers worked with these 16 people who had a lot of fat in their livers and confirmed by a test called liver protein density fat fraction, right, what their scores were.
Okay.
They did.
But you said they were already pretty high.
They were.
That's crazy.
Yeah. They did liver biopsies and used special tools like the MNR spectroscopy. I can't even say that word. And to measure how the liver processes fat and makes energy. Okay, so.
All right.
Coming full around, the study found that when the body is in producing that ketogenesis is strongly tied to how much fat the liver burns overall. So when the ketogenesis is active, it helps the liver burn more fat, which could reduce harmful fat buildup.
Okay.
So the question is again, how do you bring on ketogenesis, right?
Well, so, by cutting out, pretty much cutting out all your carbs, really.
Correct.
But
correct.
I would think that a lot of people that are having this, these diseases, which would also be probably like a fatty liver anyway, right? Fatty liver disease, is that they're eating way too many carbs and maybe drinking way too much and not helping them. They're just taxing their liver and not helping it. They're not giving it an opportunity to burn off that extra fat.
Right.
Would that would be an accurate statement, would it not?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So it found in these people, what they discovered was a key ketogenesis enzyme. A high fat, low carb diet led to more liver fat
being burned.
Led to more liver fat. Let's see. Hold on here. So I got to reread this here. Make sure I'm reading this right.
I mean, because okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. So showing ketogenesis protects the liver. Okay. So the study suggests ketogenesis helps the liver stay healthy by balancing fat and possibly reducing inflammation, not just burning fat for energy. So ketogenesis protects the liver. Things like ketogenic diet or ketone supplements might help treat liver disease, but more research is needed. And you notice all studies say that.
More research is needed.
They all say that.
Well, and the other word that I really like in these studies is possibly.
Yes.
Possibly.
Yes, yes. Well, I think they do that for...
CYA?
Yeah, I mean, or...
That's covering your ass.
Covering your ass, yeah.
CYA.
Or I was going to say legal, you know...
Mumbo-jumbo.
Mumbo-jumbo to yeah. kind of protect themselves a little bit.
Right.
So the study suggests that ketogenesis, the process where the liver converts fat into ketones for energy, may help protect against metabolic dysfunction associated to steatotic liver disease and its progression to metabolic dysfunction associated steatohepatitis.
I know, that's a tough word.
That's a
long
word.
Yeah,
well, let's call it MASH.
Okay.
A high-fat, low-carb... low carbohydrate, moderate protein diet. Okay, well, I disagree with that.
What was that? You said high protein, low fat?
It went on to say a high fat, low carbohydrate, moderate protein diet.
Okay.
Commonly known as a ketogenic diet is one effective way to induce ketogenesis. The dietary approach could potentially support liver health by reducing fat buildup and inflammation as in indicated by the study's findings. However, while the study highlights ketogenesis' protective role, it doesn't definitely prove that ketogenic diet will heal the liver in all cases. Individual results may vary. Below, I will, let's see, so it goes on clarifying what a ketogenesis diet looks like. So, they even give their own input. So a high-fat, low-carb, moderate protein. Now, again, I don't agree with the moderate protein. I don't know what they mean by that. So let's see if they tell us.
Right.
What they mean by high fat is that your high... Whoa. They think the fat should be 65 to 75% of your calories.
Ooh, that is a lot of fat.
That is a shit ton of fat. Excuse my language. That is a ton of fat.
But remember, again, you have bad fats like trans fats, but you also have the good fats. And if those are good fats... Let's assume that they're good fats. Let's see what else.
Yeah, they go the healthy fats being avocados, olive oil, coconut oil, butter, fish. Just to let people know, my fats on my meal plans are usually 50%.
So this is a little higher than that. Yeah. But if the fats include fish, you're also getting some protein out of that fish too, right?
Yeah.
So let's
okay,
see.
Okay, so go on. Low carbohydrates, 20 to 50 grams net.
20 to 50. Okay. But
that's about where mine are.
Yeah, I don't
I go up to about 70, but mine are pretty close to that.
Okay.
Restricting carbs deletes glycogen stores and forces the liver to rely on fat for energy, which triggers ketogenesis.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
So what did it say about the protein then?
Okay, this will be interesting. Moderate protein, 15 to 25% of your calories.
Oh, yeah, that's...
That's low. But they go on to say 0.6 to 1 gram per pound of lean body. Oh, lean body mass. That's different than body.
Right.
Body weight. So your body mass is going to be a different number.
Right.
Right.
But then they also threw in lean body mass.
Right. So this is interesting. Now, okay. I bet this is my interpretation of this. Okay. It says excessive protein can be converted into glucose via glycogenesis, which may raise the blood sugar and reduce ketone production. Okay. I believe that to be true. Okay. It goes on to say, as a lifter in your 50s, aim for higher end 0.8 to 1 gram pound of lean mass to support muscle maintenance without disrupting ketosis. Okay, so
it's muscle maintenance. You're not going to lose muscle. You're just maintaining the muscle you have.
Yes.
Which is a difference.
Right. And I would say that 0.8 to 1 grams per pound of body weight to add muscle.
Right.
Add muscle, right. Not to maintain muscle.
Not to
muscle.
Maintain.
So,
but again, they're talking about body mass. You're talking about body weight. Two different things.
Yes, two different things.
Right.
High protein. So they go on to say, why not high protein? High protein intake can stimulate glycogenesis, which increases blood glucose, insulin potentially, and inhibiting ketogenesis. So I would say I agree with that if they do no exercise.
No exercise?
Yeah.
If they're why couldn't they just do like a treadmill or do something like that to where you're getting your heart rate up?
No, I mean, they should.
Right.
But what I'm saying is that they're saying that 0.6 to 1 gram of protein for lean body mass, which is a different number. I think if it's like lean body mass makes up like 60% or 50%. I can't remember. I would have to look that up. But see, let me do a quick find here. Patience with me here, folks. Lean body mass makes up. Wait. Okay, so quickly, what this is going to tell us is, 60%. Usually lean body mass makes up 60 to 90% of your body weight. So that's not far off. I would say it's probably, if you're working out, it's going to be making up about 70, 80 to 90 probably.
Okay.
And if you're not, it's probably in the 60 to 70. So I was going to say 60, but I wasn't 100% sure. Because I usually communicate with people on their percentage fat and their skeletal muscle mass. But that being said, let's go back to where we were here. I lost my spot here, but the thing on that is that I think if you're sitting, which is what we're, here we go. If we're sitting, that probably makes sense. You might have, your fat, your protein could turn into sugar if you're just sitting around eating lots of protein. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, I don't see why it couldn't. Your body has to be moving. I mean, it has a little bit of a burn mechanism already, but if you're just sitting doing nothing, that burn mechanism is going to eventually slow way down or shut off to where you're just going to store it. And unfortunately for me, with my line of work, I go in and I'll work out at the gym, and then very first thing in the morning, 5 to 7, I'm at the gym, and then I'll get home, and I'm usually, lately, I'll be sitting most of the day.
Yeah.
I'll get up and
yeah.
take breaks, but I'm moving around a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I can see that, where it's going to sit on you just a little bit.
Well, and I'm not saying that that's what's going to happen, because, even though I have done a few meal plans for people who are not that active, but I usually am advising them to be active.
Right.
And if they're not active, there's two times I give them less than 0.8. That's when that's per pound of body weight, not lean body mass.
Right.
That I'll give them, but very rarely do I do that. But the two times I usually do that is if one, they're currently only eating, less than you know, 70 grams of protein a day, mm-hmm. Which is, they got to have more than that to maintain, even if they're not working out.
Right.
And, they're not that active. You know, I've done 0.7, you know, I don't think I've ever gone below that, based on your activity level. And, but usually it always leans back. If I'm giving you lower than 1.0 on protein, it's because the amount of protein they're eating right now is so low, mm-hmm. that having them eat 1-to-1, put 1 gram of protein, 1 pound of body weight.
It's a big adjustment.
That's a massive adjustment.
Yeah, big.
So that being said, that, you know, moving forward, not a huge, I mean, a little bit of contention there with that there, again, there's a lot of studies that will support the 0.8 to 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight. Okay. There's a lot of studies that support that. So that being said, the study had, like I said, had 16 participants. So not a lot of participants.
Right.
They had all had liver damage, and they also had mouse models too. They used mice and developed that.
So they had 16 of those too, or
no? I don't know how many they had of those, but they're talking about it here. Said they had mice which with impaired ketogenesis and developed severe liver fat buildup on high fat. Oh, that's weird. High fat. They build up. Oh, they had. Okay, they had severe fat buildup. And
but what would you feed mice that would? Feed them carbs.
Yeah, they gave them a low carb diet.
A low carb diet, and they had fat buildup.
No, they put these mice on a high fat, low carb diet, and. They had less fat accumulation on this diet, and this supports the idea that ketogenesis prevents excess liver in the fat.
Okay, so they didn't. Okay, so they didn't have the excess fat buildup with the high fat, low carb.
They came in carb. Like that, okay. And then they gave them the diet, okay. And then it started
and then
to reverse it.
It started melting off.
Right,
they start burning it.
So the study highlights the fat ketogenesis protects the liver not just by burning fat, but also through other pathways like regulating lipid pallid and possibly reducing inflammation via ketone signaling. So then it cites a bunch of citations and stuff like that, and goes into, you know, limitations and cautions, which we don't need to get into. But that being said, I just wanted to put that study out there because that's what all my meal plans are. You know, is that I'm getting rid of. Well, and that's the other thing is, like, I've noticed in all my studies that the now this isn't in the liver. This is more of the fat around the organs, mm-hmm. right? Your visceral fat reduces as well.
Which I think isn't this not the visceral fat around your belly, it's between, around the midsection?
Well, it's the fat between the organs, right?
Which is a little deeper.
A little deeper.
And that's the harder fat to get rid of.
Right, it's a harder fat. Well, and that's definitely the alcohol, the sugary drinks. Those that definitely turns into that visceral fat and definitely builds it up. And you definitely want to get rid of that because this makes the organs work harder, mm-hmm. and you don't want them working harder.
Well, so I would suggest, or I would not even suggest, I would say that when you have a meal plan, obviously the three things that you build that around are your proteins, your fats, and your carbs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm definitely a proponent, especially depending on the body style that you have to help it speed up even more. To me, carbs are always going to be on the low side of the three. It's just a matter of getting your fat and your protein in line based on how well your body's responding to it and what your body style is or type is. And then you tweak those two. And then, to me, I think you tweak those two first and then you bring in the carbs last and let that fill in. But I think you're
well,
more of a high protein.
I'm going to give this caveat before we sign off because we're at our time.
But, okay.
If Parker was here, he'd call me out right now.
He would.
Oh, yeah. Because I've been bulking a long time.
Right.
And I ate as clean as I could for a long time, and I was stuck at 212. And I added a half gallon, quarter to a half gallon of chocolate milk a day, which got me to my 220.
I didn't even think about that. Yeah. They should have brought you up as bulking. That's good.
Yeah. So I might have some fatty in my liver. But that
but it was good milk fat.
Good milk fat. Yeah. But the thing is, I recently have started to cut because both Parker and my coach Angel, they both think that I can recomp and lose some fat and try to convert and grow, go back up and have a little bit higher percentage of muscle than fat. So they both
by decreasing your carbs or your fat.
Yeah. So I've decreased my carbs. I lost 6 pounds like in 3 days.
Okay.
So
you must have been having a lot of carbs in.
I also had a decent amount. Okay. That mean to maintain 220, it is a struggle to maintain 220. I mean, it's like a constant battle daily for me to maintain 220.
Well, you have to put food as a priority.
It is. Yeah. Food is a priority. And to maintain 220 is very, it's been very difficult.
Yeah.
And
I can see that.
Because I'm constantly, every day, it's kind of tiring, to be honest.
Because it has to be a priority.
And I kind of let the carbs, I've kind of dropped my carbs in my, which definitely takes down my calories. And I got on the scale the other day, and I'd only been doing it a week, and I lost like 6 pounds. Parker's like, wow, you lost 6 pounds already. And it's like, that's how much carbs affect you.
Yeah.
Crazy,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's crazy. And so they want me to get down to, 10 to 15 pounds, 210, 215, or 205, 210.
I'm at 205 is where I've been hovering.
Yeah, so I'm going to probably get down to around 210, maybe a little bit lower. And then I'm trying to time it with my shoulder, kind of time it in a way that I lose the weight about the same time the shoulder heals, and then I start adding back on. So, yeah.
Let me know how that goes, because I don't want to add more carbs, and I don't really want to gain weight. I want to try to be as strong as I can be maintaining my body weight.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't mind tweaking my my ratio just to see where I'm at. I think mm-hmm. I've been doing okay. I guess where mine is going to be is just cutting out my bourbon.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
and my apple cider.
Your apple cider and your bourbon. Yeah. Well, any closing thoughts?
As always, thank you.
Yeah.
Appreciate being on and hanging with you. Unfortunately, that means Parker can't be here, but he's
all right.
He's a busy boy.
He's a busy boy, and I think with him, things going on with Parker and his family and his busy life, we might see a little more Brian. But there's nothing wrong with that.
No, I hope not. I hope everybody at home is okay with that. I definitely enjoy being on here. So thanks again, Matt, for letting me come on. And before we know it here, a week from tomorrow is next Friday, a week from yesterday, is the first Chiefs game of the year. Do you want to go ahead and make a prediction?
Oh, yeah. Who are they playing?
L.A., the Chargers, and it's in Brazil. So we have a Friday night game at 7 because they're playing in Brazil, and it's the first game of the year, and it's against the Los Angeles Chargers.
Who's the Chargers quarterback?
That is Justin Herbert, and that is Jim Harbaugh.
He's decent.
Jim Harbaugh is their coach. This will be his second year.
Jim Harbaugh is kind of sneaky.
He
kind of knows how to get wins.
Well, so we beat them last year 17-10 in L.A., and I don't remember what the score was at home, but we beat them at home as well.
Yeah. It's in Brazil?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not okay, I'm going to go Chiefs win 21-20.
Ooh, okay.
Tight game.
Very tight game. I was actually I'm picking the Chiefs, but I was going to give the Chargers more points. Although our defense has looked very, very good, I think it's going to take them a little time to round out into midseason form. So I think they're going to give up a little bit of points. But I was going to go 24-20.
Okay. Well, both very good scores. All right. Well, we'll see how we're doing. And, guys, we'll check you hopefully back next week.
Thank you. Have a good one.
All right. Take care, guys.
Hey, look at you. You've completed another milestone by finishing this episode of Loading the Bar. Your future self thanks you profusely. Loading the Bar is podcasted from Lee Summit, Missouri. Email us at cpt.kansascity@gmail.com. Forge ahead and share your progress. And we'll see you back here for another episode of Loading the Bar.